67. The man comes around.
Maul looked at Radik for a moment in silence. After searching for him for so long, the sight of him standing less than 2 meters away brought with it a distinct tremor of unreality, as if this too might be little more than a dream. Radik was a tall, near-human with blue skin, gleaming black hair and glowing red eyes. He was dressed in black robes, with black gloves and boots fashioned from the same thick, well-polished reptile skin. His face was lean and cold, as if carved from a solid block of Vardium steel. Crimson eyes gazed back at Maul, and his lips twisted with a kind of quiet arrogance that spoke of 1,000 enemies vanquished, 1,000 attempts on his life survived. The clawbirds had settled around behind him, gathered at his feet.
"I see you found my pets," Radik said. "Or they found you."
"You knew they would," Maul said. "You sent them for me."
"Perhaps I did."
"We have to go," Maul said. "The Bando Gora is already among us."
"The Gora."
Radik's face tightened with the briefest flicker of pain.
"You have made a grave mistake bringing those vermin here."
He glanced at Iagan.
"The boy's father paid for it with his life. Now it seems that your life, too, shall be forfeit because of them."
Maul didn't move.
"You don't believe me?
Or you don't believe in the power that I wield?" "Neither."
Maul stepped forward.
"I've simply been given no choice in the matter, and neither have you."
He cast his gaze across the weapon shop. Of the assembly line of eyeless inmates that had been laboring over the different gun parts and components the last time he'd been here, fewer than half remained. The ones that were left sat rigid in front of partially assembled weapons, gripping the table with white knuckles. Were Radik's people deserting him, fleeing during these final moments? Or was there some deeper mutiny taking place?
"You're mistaken," Radik said.
Maul looked back at those red eyes. For a long moment, neither of them spoke. Then, all at once, the entire prison gave a violent, galvanic shudder, hard enough to shift the racks and rows of crates strapped down against the back wall. Radik never lifted his gaze from Maul.
"It's all coming to an end," Maul said. "If we don't act now, we'll all die here."
"We'll die regardless."
Radik pressed his finger into Maul's chest.
"You still carry an explosive in your heart, Jagannath, don't forget. And your time is running out."
He nodded down to the floor beneath the workspace, and Maul looked down to see where the other prisoners had gone. They lay dead under the table, their eyeless sockets upraised into whatever version of oblivion had overtaken them.
"What happened?"
"If I had to speculate," Radik said, "I believe that Warden Siddiqui has launched the Omega Initiative. It's a fail-safe mechanism designed to systematically trigger the electronic charges in the hearts of all the inmates here."
"Including you?"
"Well," Radik's smile was razor thin, "I've got what you might call special dispensation."
"Wait," Iagan said. "So you mean..."
He glanced at Maul, then back at Radik, his voice going higher in pitch.
"How much time do we have?"
"That depends on your number. Lower ones go first. But you'll get your turn, I'm sure."
"Then we have no time to waste,"
Maul said.
"Somewhere in your shop, you've got a proscribed nuclear device. You're going to help me deliver it into the hands of the Bando Gora. That's all."
The room shook again, harder. On the floor, the piles of the eyeless dead shifted and twitched together like a deputation of spastics.
Why would I defy a lifelong oath never to do business with a cult of criminal thugs who tried to kill me? Radik asked. Without answering, Maul pushed past him toward the table, where a half-packed crate of Radik's synthetic lightsaber sat open, forgotten by the inmate who'd been working on it. He reached in and took one of them out, popped open the hilt, and withdrew the crystal.
Boy, he said, open the package.
Egan blinked and then dropped to his knees next to the parcel that they'd brought up from the loading bay. Peeling back the outer shell, he withdrew an oblong console, laying it out on the floor. The compressor unit itself was sleek and nearly featureless, with the exception of a small transparent dome on top.
You recognize the new geological compressor,
Maul said.
You were expecting its arrival. You sent Slipher to go retrieve it.
Without waiting for Radik's response, he lifted the lid and dropped the synthetic crystal inside. He closed his eyes, placing both hands on the compressor, letting the power of the dark side move through him as the console warmed beneath his palms. He could feel the crystal changing inside it, its very atoms shifting, the lattice tightening and binding together into new molecules, becoming something utterly different beneath the applied pressure of the Force. Opening the compressor, he removed the crystal and held it up. It looked different now. Darker, heavier, its facets gleaming with a deeper shade of red. Maul slipped it back into the lightsaber, reassembled the components, and held the weapon up, flicking the switch. The beam sprang to life in his hand, filling the shop with the familiar oscillating hum that he would have recognized in his sleep. The blade was solid, straight, and true. Maul could feel the power of the thing vibrating through the bones of his forearm, a natural extension of his own innate strength. Extending his arm to its full length, he waited while Radik examined it. The arms dealer's bluish face had changed color in the light of the beam.
Remarkable, he whispered. I can show you how it's done,
Maul said.
But first I need the nuclear device delivered. And I need the explosives disarmed inside my chest. The droid from Medbay can do that.
What makes you think?
There's no time to argue. Do we have a deal or not?
Radik looked at him. The room gave another jerk, and Maul saw that several more of the workers had dropped to the floor on top of the bodies that were already there. He held out his hand. Switching off the lightsaber, Maul placed it in the other's waiting palm.
The nuclear device is in that crate, Radik said, giving a side nod to the large box strapped to the wall in the far corner of the shop. He hadn't taken his red-eyed gaze from the lightsaber in his hand.
Over there, at the end.
Come, boy.
Maul nodded at the crate.
We don't have much time.
Wait, what about the electrostatic charges in our hearts?
Egan asked.
We'll detour past the medbay,
Maul said, keeping his eyes fixed on the red-eyed man.
Mr. Radik will have the droid ready for us.
How do we know?
It's in his best interest.
If I'm dead, I won't be able to show him what he needs to know about the lightsabers.
Without waiting for acknowledgement from Radik, Maul crossed over to the crate and unstrapped it. It was warm to the touch, and humming slightly from within.
Now, boy.
Reluctantly, Egan picked up his end and they lifted, carrying it out of the shop. One of Radik's claw birds flew in front of them, and they followed it down the concourse toward the upper levels of the prison. Not long afterward, they started to come across the bodies.
68. Malefactors.
Jabba,
Voza said, staring into the hologram.
Why am I not surprised to find you in the middle of this?
The hollow vid of the hut perched above her, glaring down at her through baleful eyes. His henchmen, the remaining Gamorreans who hadn't followed the newly released prisoners on a looting spree through Coghive 7, aimed their blasters at the Bando Gora standing behind her.
Gamari Voza!
The crime lord snarled in Hatties. His no longer amused gaze traveling across the group of skull-masked Gora soldiers.
What are you and your brain-dead army of minions doing here?
We were summoned here.
Voza gestured across the hangar.
I trust you'll let us pass?
Jabba cursed, uttering a phlegmy oath in Hatties.
You'll trust wrong, insect. I will crush you like the foul infection that you are.
You'll try.
Reaching down, Voza withdrew the twin curved hilt lightsabers that she wore at her hips, activating both blades simultaneously, filling the air around her with an electrifying vibrational hiss. The effect, even on Jabba himself, was immediate and impressive. The hollow flickered, and when it returned, he gestured to the Gamorreans flanking him, grunting out an order of execution.
Dogwe! Kipuna!
The Gamorreans opened fire from either side, but Voza moved faster than they could shoot, faster even than the naked eye could see. Adapting the Form 1 style of Sarisu, she whirled her lightsabers in front of her, their blades absorbing and deflecting the blasts easily from all sides. The outcome was never truly in doubt. Darting forward, she slashed the blaster directly from the hand of the nearest thug, piston-kicked him backward, and spun to bisect the Trandoshan behind her neatly at the waist. Throughout it all, the expression on her face, focused yet unhurried, almost relaxed, revealed virtually nothing about what was happening inside her mind, nor about the true purpose of her visit here. Heads down, Bando Gora soldiers charged forward to overtake Jabba's entourage, their staffs blazing with greenish balls of fire that arced and exploded in the faces of the startled Gamorreans. Within seconds, they decimated the hut's hired muscle, leaving their bodies splayed limp on the floor of the hangar.
Now,
Voza said, deactivating the lightsabers as she made her way toward the hollow vid.
Since we've dispatched with the unpleasantries, I take it you'll allow me to complete my work here?
You'll fight well for a Jedi whore,
Jabba told her, arms upraised in a gesture of mock surrender.
I see that you've lost none of your skills.
Jedi?
Voza frowned, a single wrinkle creasing her forehead as if the word itself triggered its own private dose of pain.
That word is blasphemy to me.
Is it?
Jabba chuckled, probing more deeply.
And what of your beloved Master Dooku? Surely, as his former Padawan, there must be a lingering warmth in your heart for him still, after all that he did for you.
Dooku.
Voza's lips tightened, and all the easy confidence that she displayed just seconds earlier began to ebb away. The tightness that replaced it made her face appear angular, and her yellow eyes blazed.
You dare not speak that obscenity before me, now or ever.
Ah!
Emboldened by her response, Jabba pushed on.
And yet I wonder, have you considered that he may yet harbor feelings for you? That in time, he could possibly come and join you to lead your army of...
Enough!
The word burst from Voza's lips, and in a fusillade of inarticulate pain and rage, she lunged forward, swinging both lightsabers outward at the holovid, the blade sweeping through his image. The hut chuckled with appreciation.
You do contain great depths, Gamari Voza. Perhaps you would consider an alliance?
The Bando Gora allies with no one.
You've associated with Gardula Basaldi in the past. Help me get rid of her, and perhaps I'll let you leave this prison alive.
Voza shook her head.
Never.
Foolish to the last.
The Hutt nodded unperturbed.
Make no mistakes, scum. I will exterminate you in due time. Just not this time.
Or ever.
We'll see.
Waving one hand at the berthing dock from which Voza and her army had emerged, Jabba's holovid image settled back on the repulsor platform with a faint smirk. It was the indulgent expression of a singularly untrustworthy uncle whose favor was merely an indication of profound treachery to come.
My business here is through. Be on your way.
But Voza was already gone, storming across the hangar, followed by her army, toward what awaited them on the upper levels. She moved quickly, as if there was something else pursuing her, something that she alone could see. And so it was. Ensconced in her private darkness, Voza had always moved with a speed and purpose unmitigated by the weakness of human emotion. Back in the hangar, the holovid image of the Hutt had touched upon it briefly but agonizingly. With his flagrant evocation of the Order and the one whose name still caused her unspeakable pain, Voza hated herself for the way she'd responded. Her first and most enduring instinct to bury that pain, sinking it so deeply into her unconscious mind that it could no longer touch her, had not worked as it should. It wasn't supposed to hurt like this anymore. Making her way up through the empty corridors of Coghive 7, she felt cracks forming in her resolve.
Press on.
Yes, that was all that mattered. The Order was dead to her now, a crumbling artifact of her distant past, as was her former master, her sworn enemy, whom she now thought of only as an abomination before everything that mattered. Although the memory of his face and their times together still held powerful sway over her. When she thought of him, Voza felt something moving inside her chest, a gravitational shift that took hold of her most basic emotions. Curse the Hutt for mentioning him, dredging those thoughts up now. But it was too late to stop. With an uncharacteristic twinge of masochism, Voza allowed herself to think on the name consciously, touching on it like the tip of the tongue to an infected tooth. Just once.
Dooku.
And pushed it aside. Glancing back at the captain, who'd followed her with unfailing loyalty, and the skull-masked fighters gathered behind her, Voza reassured herself that this was right. She had a new alliance, new blood oaths, as leader of an unstoppable army of fighters who would willingly lay down their lives for her. It was enough.
69. Low numbers.
Getting the crate across the open area outside the mess hall took longer than Maul had anticipated. They had to step over all the bodies. The gallery was littered with them. Everywhere they looked, inmates of the Hive were sinking to the floor, faces gone slack and lifeless, landing unceremoniously on top of the dead prisoners who'd actually succumbed to the electrostatic charges. The smell of death had begun to fill this place as the prison transformed itself into a vast floating crypt. The claw bird that was leading them stopped occasionally to land on one of the bodies and pluck out an eye. It wasn't entirely silent. Off in the distance, from the long corridors leading to the cells, Maul heard occasional shrieks and cries for help. The pleas of those who hadn't yet died, perhaps,
or the primitive outcry of the new inmates that Jabba had released from the incoming barge, the ones without bombs inside their hearts. At one point, a spate of blaster fire rang out and ceased abruptly, followed by a wild, shrieking symphony of lunatic laughter. Madness had triumphed in the final hours of Coghive 7. 20 meters in front of them, a group of prisoners, Maul realized that they were the last surviving members of the Bone Kings and Gravity Massive, brought together in the penultimate moments of their lives, came scurrying out of the mess hall carrying a tremendous steaming vat of stolen food. They walked past Maul and Eagan without so much as a sidelong glance. Nobody stopped them. The last remaining guards seemed to have gone into hiding. Unless those were the screams Maul kept hearing. He wondered if the newly arrived inmates were holding the guards somewhere and torturing them slowly. Or perhaps they'd met the worm. As they approached the far side of the gallery, Eagan kept glancing down, trying to read the numbers on their uniforms, as if it could give him an idea of how far along the process was. Even Maul, despite his commitment to the task at hand, found himself wondering how much longer they had. There were to be no more matches to save him now.
"The med bay is just through here," he said. "It's not too late. The surgical droid can..."
Maul stopped walking, not out of uncertainty, but simply to stretch out with his feelings to see if he could ascertain where the Bando Gora was at this precise moment. Somewhere in the outer reaches of his sensibilities, a pang of unease stung him. A twinge that he associated most closely with those moments at the top of the Limerge building, when he'd stared at the window of the Jedi Temple in the distance.
"Vozai is here. Very close now."
He would finish his task for his master, yes. But the possibility that he might drop dead from something as maddeningly trivial as an electrostatic discharge in his hearts before he could confront the filthy ex-Jedi who'd come here to face him was more than even Maul himself could bear. In the end, that was what decided it.
"The medbay, then,"
he said with a nod, ignoring the expression of relief that flashed across the boy's face as he said it.
"Quickly.